So here we are to welcoming you into the third and final hour of the Talking Point here on SFM. Please join what probably is going to be a very interesting conversation that we're going to have on the number 086-000-2032 and WhatsApp us if you want to join in also on 061-410-4107. You can also send an SMS if you're that way inclined on the number 41391, but that SMS will come to you at 150. We're on the platform formerly known as Twitter. We are at SFM Radio there, and please hashtag SFM Talking Point when you talk to us. So in South Africa, 9.1 million young people are not in education as we're talking. They're not in employment. They're not in training. And many of our listeners have shared their reflections on freedom and what the 30-year milestone of freedom means for them, and how not being able to access economic opportunity ultimately means that they are unable to tangibly hold in their hands the fruits of freedom. So we're continuing a series of discussions. We are having a conversation today surrounding issues around the right to work, the right to job creation, and the dignity of a living wage. And we further expand this discussion by unpacking if political parties have struck the balance in developing economic policies that will address the unemployment crisis. Because did they not in their manifesto policies talk a lot about unemployment? In fact, in many polls, unemployment has been highlighted as the top voting priority for the 2024 national and provincial elections. In fact, if you care to listen to a lot of the manifestos, a lot of political parties are talking, like I said this morning, in the open line, like employment agencies themselves. A lot of them will say, we're going to create 600,000 jobs, which is what, the Rise Mzansi people here in Gauteng said. The other political parties, some parties will say, we're going to create 2 million jobs, we're going to create 1 million jobs, and so on and so forth. In fact, before we even start our conversation, let me give you a snippet from what Vuyiswa Ramokgopa from Rise Mzansi said about the issue not so long ago.
I, Vuyiswa Ramokgopa, I have a plan for Gauteng. I have a plan to reignite this economy and create jobs. 600,000 permanent new jobs. I love my peace job, love. I love my peace job. I have a plan to ensure that our children are cared for. I have a plan to clean out all the corrupt politicians and corrupt officials in government. I have a plan to clean our streets and ensure that the people of Gauteng no longer live in squalor and filth and dirt.
It's not just her. Colleen Makubela from the SA Rainbow Alliance had this to say as well.
In order for us to turn around the economy, bring in investment, we need the growth policies that are business friendly, that are going to attract investment. So that's what you can expect under G, the growth. E, we are going to talk about how we're going to create employment. We anticipate to create 5 million jobs in the first year of office within 12 months. We want to increase the grants to counter the high cost of living.
And then Julius Malema, remember at the manifesto launch of the EFF?
We're going to create jobs, and we don't make an apology when we say we're going to create jobs for all South Africans, irrespective of their qualification, irrespective of their age, irrespective of their background. These jobs are going to come from social housing and roads infrastructure. Just with social housing and roads infrastructure alone, we are going to build to create 4 million jobs. Comrades, we are going to insource security guards and create a state-owned security company that will create 1 million jobs within a year. At the center of our job strategy is building of industries. We want to re-industrialize South Africa, use state funding. We must not rely on a private sector because they failed long time ago.
So if I can, you know, use my maths, which is not the most phenomenal, but just those three political parties alone, right? If I'm calculating correctly, they are promising about 10.6 million jobs, right? Just those three political parties alone. So definitely, whoever wins the May 29 vote faces a job creation challenge in this country. So we thought, let's have this conversation. We invited Duma Qubule. Duma Qubule is a columnist and an independent economist. We also invited Crystal Duncan Williams, project lead at Youth Capital. Youth Capital, if you didn't know, is a campaign advocating for youth-centered and evidence-based solutions to youth unemployment. We also have Dominic Brown, economic justice program manager at the Alternative Information and Development Center. Good morning to all of you guests, and thank you so much for joining me. Three of those political parties that I played, we could have gotten all of them. Three of them at least on the table promised at least 10.6 million jobs. Clearly, the issue of job creation is the biggest thing on the table as we go into the elections. And let me start with you, Duma. Good morning. But, you know, I said this morning, they are not employment agencies. What's the issue? Should they even be promising jobs?
Okay, first thing, Kathy, I just want to say our unemployment crisis is a national...
KG, Duma. Kathy's not here today.
Oh, KG. Oh, sorry, KG. Sorry. Okay, KG, our unemployment crisis is a national disgrace, the most heartbreaking betrayal of the dreams and promises of our liberation. The government has failed the people who fought for so long for a better life for all. South Africans must understand the scale of this crisis, KG. We have the highest unemployment rate in the world, according to the World Bank last year. Djibouti was number two. West Bank and Gaza, before the genocide, were in third position. We have the second highest youth unemployment rate in the world after Djibouti. So the numbers are as follows, KG. 11.7 million people were unemployed during the fourth quarter of 2023. The unemployment rate for young people, youth, was 69.1%. It was 45.4% for Africans, 49.1% for African females, and 41.1% for people of all races. Now, according to my calculation, my modeling, until 2035, we have to create 1.6 million jobs every year until 2035. So there's one thing I just forgot to mention, KG. My modeling shows that we've got 11.7 million unemployed currently. We have to, so there's 700,000 people who are going to enter the labor force every year until 2035. So to create full employment, and I think that should be the objective of every political party, full employment is 5% or less. We have to create 1.6 million jobs a year. Now, to just absorb the 700,000 people who are unemployed, let alone the 700,000 people who enter the labor market, let alone the 11.7 who are unemployed, we need a GDP growth rate of 4%. So the KG, quickly, I just want to say, people must understand that unemployment is not primarily about skills or education. It's a macroeconomic policy issue. It's not about projects, skills projects, and random projects. It's about changing our macroeconomic policy. So first thing we need as a country, our NDP sets a target of 5.4 million jobs by 5.4% GDP growth by 2030 and 11 million jobs by 2030. But the problem right now is that nobody is responsible for creating those jobs. National Treasury only cares about debt, and the Reserve Bank only cares about inflation. So what we need to start this employment, confront this crisis, is we need a binding GDP growth target of at least 6% a year, that is binding on National Treasury and the Reserve Bank. That's number one. Number second lever is to have, so there's a relationship between GDP growth and employment. It's called the employment multipliers. So there has never been jobless growth in South Africa. That's a fact over the past two decades, the work I've done. So it's about, so every percentage point of GDP growth results in employment of 0.9. So if you put those numbers together, the second lever is to have industrial policies that will create labor-intensive jobs. Now, our industrial policy is non-existent. We spend 0.3% of GDP on industrial policy, and we use too few policy tools. The third thing we need to do, KG, is to expand public employment. Now, I just want to say, Crystal is going to talk about this as well. But the thing is, right now, we have three public employment programs, the presidential employment stimulus, the community works program, and the expanded public works program. They create 1.8 million work opportunities every year, and they create, about my calculation, about 900,000 full-time equivalent jobs. Now, the budget in 2024 has cut spending to those programs by more than 10 billion. So the beneficiaries of this thing will be cut by half, according to my calculation. So instead of 900,000 full-time equivalent jobs, we're going to be creating about 450,000. So the ANC in its manifesto said 2.5 million work opportunities. I don't know whether that's a cumulative target or an annual target, because they don't say in the manifesto. It is shameful that the ANC, I grew up in an ANC family, they don't have a single target for jobs in their manifesto. And this is what I've been telling the ANC people. You can't have a manifesto that doesn't have a target for jobs. So what the manifesto says about 2.5 million work opportunities is contradicted by what National Treasury has done, cutting public employment by 10 billion rand. So we need to rapidly expand public employment in our country, because GDP growth alone will not be enough. Industrial policies alone will not be enough. Such is the scale of this crisis. So we have to create public employment opportunities and increase the quality of this public employment programs in our country. There must be more full-time jobs. There must be more training. There must be more, meaningful jobs that people have. And lastly, I just want to say, I talked to the people who do the community works program. It is heartbreaking. And this is about 2 days of work for people who do cleaning, in government offices. And there's no training. There's no upward projection. Upward mobility prospects for the people who do this work, and they've just been doing it for years, and they get 1,100 rand a month, and we can't say that is real work. It helps the people who are getting the things, but we have to increase the quality of these programs. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So let's bring you, Crystal Duncan Williams, project lead at the Youth Capital, into the conversation. What is our spending on youth programs, and where should it ideally be?
Thanks so much, KG. I think the problem is not necessarily in how much money has been spent on youth development. I agree with Duma that we need to invest more in public employment programs specifically. But as we look at spending on youth development as a whole, our issue is not how much money we're spending on these programs. It's the strategy we're employing to spend that money. The Department of Labor made a big announcement, last week, announcing the launch of a LAP, the LAP program, which is a labor activation program, they're calling it, with billions of rands being spent on this program, 64 billion, I think, if I'm correct. And what, when you read the reports there, I fail to see how it's an employment program. It sounds like a skills program, which then raises the question, why is there not better synergy between these government programs if you think about the billions that are being spent? So for us at Youth Capital, a lot of the time when we talk about youth development, we say it's not an issue of how much money is being spent, but rather how are these different pieces of the puzzle linking together, and how is government working with different actors? For example, public employment programs become far more valuable and give a far greater return on investment when we partner with the business sector. And we're not just talking big business here. We're talking about local level business owners who are near the schools where the teachers assistants are employed and would be willing to take young people on when the short-term public employment program ends. How do we bring these businesses into these conversations? Even when we're talking about spending billions on skilling, you know, the billions that CETA gets from the skills levy, and I know Duma has those numbers in his head, but, you know, what work is industry doing to shape this conversation? And what could be done better to string these pieces together? You know, what I am alarmed by is the fact that we hear these big numbers. So, you know, you played the clip at the beginning, all these promises of jobs. But what I fail to see across these political manifestos is a clear sense of how they're going to possibly achieve these targets. You know, Duma, you know, spoke about just how far we are in terms of GDP growth from where we are to where we want to be. And it's nice when you're politicking and trying to get votes to say, I'm going to create so many hundreds of thousands of jobs, and we hear it every election. But we never meet those targets. And why do we never meet those targets? I think because people in government and the decision makers fail to understand the real complexities of our youth employment crisis. They fail to understand what it's like to be a young person in 2024 and what is really needed to get that young person who is not in employment, education, or training from where they are without a check often, without social connections, without anybody in their home who has any kind of income. How do you get that young person economically productive? What does it take to get them into the labor market? And I think the nuances and the complexities of that are not addressed and spoken about. And that's why we keep falling short, despite billions being thrown at the problem and despite many, many promises over the last decade.
Yeah. So let's bring Dominic Brown. Dominic Brown, if you were not here when I did the intro, is Economic Justice Program Manager at the Alternative Information and Development Center. And the issue of the living wage gets talked about a lot. In fact, I think one of the financial services providers, is it Old Mutual, now has a standard, 15,000 a month as a basic salary for most of the people, or I think the people that work there. What is a living wage, Dominic? Morning.
Good morning. Maybe I can start out by saying that it doesn't come as a surprise that the majority of political parties are using the issue of unemployment to try and garner votes. In many polls, one from 2015 to 2017, another one in 2017, and another one in 2021. In all of these polls that were conducted, when people were asked, what are the major concerns that you face in this country, the majority listed unemployment as a leading issue. And this is above 60% of people's concerns, followed by the next biggest issue, which is at 30%, which is housing, education, around 28%. So unemployment's a major issue. The next question that you asked was what, sorry?
A living wage in South, yes.
So, and maybe this is another important point to make, is that, you know, South Africa is a leader of unemployment in the world. Some people say we like the Springboks in terms of inequality, the world champions. But it's nothing to be proud of course. And since apartheid, inequality has gotten worse. Now, as AIDC, we argue that amongst the leading drivers of income inequality is the levels of mass unemployment, complemented by a low-wage regime. And this is because 80% of the people who are working in this country earns below 3,500 rand per month.
Wow.
And this is a disgrace. Now, in 2012, following the Marikana massacre, the idea of a living wage was re-put on the agenda after a long time. And the idea was that a living wage would be an income that would be more than just the wage that would require to reproduce yourself to work. It would be a wage that can meet your needs as a person to be able to thrive in society, to be an effective, productive member, that it allows you to have adequate healthcare, education, leisure time, and all of these things, which includes electricity, water, time to have a braai on the weekend, etc. And most people don't have a living wage. And a big aspect of that is the unemployment crisis.
So, Duma, I'm bringing you back. So when we were listening earlier on at the introduction to some of the party's manifestos, definitely each one of them promises to clear out. In fact, promises to definitively create employment. 600,000, says Rise Mzansi, here in Gauteng, for example. We know the current premier in Lesufi, Banyaza Lesufi, has created those, what do they call them? They call them the Mabanyaza here in Gauteng. Rise Mzansi, as they are on the campaign trail, talk about creating what they say will be permanent jobs. What are the solutions that are being proposed generally in the manifestos? Are they solutions that are tangibly going to, as you read them, even at surface level, going to wipe out the issue of unemployment?
No, KG. Okay, so as I said, so unemployment is a macroeconomic policy issue. The ANC says nothing about macroeconomic policies, and all the manifestos say nothing about macroeconomic policy except the MK party. So that's number one. Number two is that, let's just look at the, you know, Rise Mzansi. Vuyiswa is one of my favorite people in South Africa, but the facts of the matter is that Gauteng, over the last 15 years, has created 288,000 jobs. And how are you going to create 600,000 jobs without telling us how you're going to create it? So most of these manifestos, they don't understand the drivers of unemployment, and they don't understand how to, you know, confront it. Let me just give you an example.
Can I ask for your indulgence, Duma? I have to go to news headlines. I want to give you enough time to elaborate on your point. So let me quickly go to news headlines and then come back to you and allow you to elaborate on your point. It's 11:30. Here's the news. Welcome back. We are in conversation with Duma Qubule, columnist and independent economist, Crystal Duncan Williams, project lead at Youth Capital, Dominic Brown, economic justice program manager. And Duma Qubule was on the platform and talking about whether the current manifestos offer tangible solutions to unemployment. And I want you to add, as you elaborate on your earlier point, Duma, whether your modeling that you spoke about earlier considers people who leave the workforce?
You mean leave as in who do what? What do you mean by leave the workforce? Yeah, sorry.
Who retire from the workforce?
Oh, yes. Okay, sure. Yeah. I haven't looked at that part of it, but I'm looking at the new entrance into the labor force, which is about 700,000 every year. But anyway, now back to the manifestos, is that the manifestos, the DA talks about creating 2 million jobs. Now, on the current low GDP growth path, the economy over the next 5 years is going to create 1.2 million jobs. And the labor force will grow by 3.4 million people. So you're not creating enough jobs just to cater for the labor force growth. So the number of unemployment, according to the DA's target, is going to increase. The number of unemployed people will increase by 1.4 million to 13.1 million, according to my calculations, in terms of the next 5 years. So that is not a proper target, because it doesn't even scratch at the surface, doesn't create jobs for the new entrants into the labor force. Thirdly, I was looking at the EFF manifesto. So 4 million people from state-owned housing and roads company, and they're going to create 4 million jobs in the short to medium term. However, the South African construction sector, the whole construction sector, has 1.3 million unemployed people in quarter four 2023. And the government portion of fixed investment is about a third. So the government can create, you know, 400,000. I mean, the government is supporting maybe, you know, a third of public investment in the country. So how are we going to create 4 million jobs when the whole sector creates 1.3 million jobs? Yeah. I mean, sorry, Number two, the state-owned security company. They'll create 1.2 million jobs through insourcing. Insourcing does not create new jobs, number one. Number two, the whole government sector employs 1.2 million people. So you can't have 1.2 million people created to do security when the whole public sector, teachers, nurses, security of, I mean, prison warders, police officers, add up to about 1.2, 1.3 million. So what I'm trying to say is that people don't understand, they haven't done the numbers. And it pains me when, you know, they don't, in the manifestos, KG, the numbers are wrong in most cases, you know. And this morning before I was reading, you know, the DA said they're going to create 800,000 jobs. But when you look at the detail, it's by 2035 in the Western Cape. They've got a target for jobs in the Western Cape. And so I think it's heartbreaking that there almost needs like a crash course for the political parties as to what can be done to address this unemployment crisis. Yeah. And let me just tell you, the last thing I have to say is that there is no unemployment we can create in the context of the government's austerity policies, because they reduce GDP growth and they limit employment creation. And I'm sorry, there's no solution out of this crisis except for the government to spend a whole lot of new money in terms of creating jobs. And lastly, on public employment, I've been saying that we should amalgamate our three public employment programs and create a new quasi-public organization with civil society oversight and professional management. And this should gradually, this new organization should be funded with the UIF surplus, which currently sits at about 110 billion rands. And they can make a huge capitalization, like 50 billion rands or whatever, to get this thing started. And so I'm just saying that these are the solutions that we are putting to the government every week. Every week we are putting solutions, civil society, youth capital, AIDC in South Africa, but the government is not listening to all these solutions that we are putting on the table. Yeah.
Crystal, Duma's talking about public and employment. Let's unpack what public employment is and the importance of skilling for this economy.
So public employment programs, I think to many South Africans, and we hear this in some sort of more right-wing political parties saying it's a handout, what we really need is just jobs, and we should scrap public employment programs. And that's really the wrong narrative, we believe. And also, I think, shows a disconnect between the realities that young people face and sort of a more old-school way of thinking about work and the world of work. The reality is that young people don't have social connections. They don't know where to look for work opportunities. In the first place, exactly. So, you know, just that first foot in the door, for the door to even open for a young person, they don't even know where to find the door. Mm. Secondly, we hear this from young people all the time. I need work experience to get a job, and I need a job to be able to get the work experience. So young people are stuck in this kind of conundrum of, every job they want to apply for expects work experience, even for very entry-level positions. The employer expects a level of understanding of the world of work that young people just don't have. Our school system doesn't equip them with it. So where are they supposed to get that? Mm. And then, you know, in South Africa, we hear from many people, we might have an employment crisis, but there's not a shortage of work to be done. There are many jobs that are required, in inverted commas, jobs by communities. The services that the private sector is not going to invest in because they can't get money from that. We're talking about early childhood development, healthcare, community health worker, door-to-door health education. We're talking about literacy and numeracy. We know that 18-10 grade 4 learners in South Africa cannot read for meaning in any language. So these are, you know, services that community needs that the private sector is not going to come and provide because there's no profit to be made. The people who need these services cannot pay for them. And public employment, when done well, and as shown by the Basic Education Employment Initiative, can address all of those things. It can provide a service in schools that is desperately needed. It can provide young people with a first work experience and exposure, especially in the school environment in particular, to different types of skills in the classroom or administration in the school office. And then also connects young people to the world of work and gives them social connections and perhaps a mentor which helps them shape their next steps. So this is why the role of public employment is so critical in 2024, not just in the South African context, but we see it in many other contexts across the world.
Yeah.
And why we need to invest in it better. than we are doing at the moment.
And then what's the role of small businesses when it comes to these sort of employment initiatives? And are they active participants, given the challenges that they themselves say they face?
Yeah, so Youth Capital did research on small and medium businesses, about a year and a half ago now. And businesses, small businesses particularly, really struggle because they want to employ young people. Often they're like, we realize we have to do this, you know, it's the future of the business, it's the future of the country. But we're a two-man team, a five-man team. I don't have an HR team to hold this young person's hand and to coach them and to give them a work experience. So these businesses sit in this conundrum with saying, we want young people who are a little bit more work ready than we're seeing, and where do we get, you know, these young people? And so public employment can really fill that gap. And it's difficult for government to work with 100 small business owners to create 100 jobs. It's much easier for businesses to go to a big firm and work with one firm and create 100 jobs. But I think we've reached saturation with these big corporates. And so we really need to think creatively about how to bring in small businesses into these conversations and to make these links at community level for businesses in those communities, to give young people a next opportunity when the public employment program ends.
Yeah, it's so incredible to me that in all of these conversations that we ever have around issues of employment, we never even include the township economy in any of these of these conversations. But I think I want to bring Dominic back in, because earlier on we talked a bit about issues of the living wage and whether or not those that are employed are even making a living wage, and that shocking example of, you know, what the lowest paid person in South Africa earns. What do you make of the announcements, having said that, around what the lowest salary in South Africa is? What do you make of the announcement that were made, Dominic, by the private companies like Santa, Old Mutual, that their lowest salaries is about 15,000 rands a month or 180,000 rands per annum?
I think it's important to look at how much of that workers are actually employed directly by Old Mutual, and how much of Old Mutual's work is conducted by consultants and labor brokers whose wages are much lower. And I would like to make a number of additional points that I think are critical to make.
Please, please.
So the first thing is, I think it's important to note Duma's points on austerity. In other words, government cutting budgets to deal with so-called rising with a debt problem. Now, Duma is correct when it says it shrinks the economy, but it also means that it prevents many of the public sector, critical public sector areas from employing the people that they need, the personnel to conduct the services required. This is in healthcare and education, where there are hundreds of thousands of unfilled vacancies, and also already about 800 unemployed doctors, for example. So it's important to recognize how government, the current government's current policies, makes the unemployment crisis worse, and none of the political parties actually deals with this issue. The second point that I want to make, Katie, is that many people attribute the problem of the unemployment problem in this country to the legacy of apartheid, the problem that we don't have enough skills, supposedly, and because apparently foreign nationals are stealing jobs. Now, in as much as the legacy of apartheid meant that we inherited high levels of unemployment, unemployment has gotten worse over the past 30 years. Secondly, the idea that we don't have sufficient skills in this economy is a misnomer. When you look at the Stats Quarterly Labor Force Survey, you will see how many artisans are currently without a job. There are people who have been plumbers, who have been bricklayers, people who have been painters, electricians, etc., unemployed, in addition to the doctors and people who are unemployed graduates. there's more than enough skills, as Crystal was indicating. The problem is we haven't been able to create sufficient amount of jobs. And we have a situation where the jobs are being created are generally jobs through labor brokers and outsourcing, which allows for the reduction in the real wages in the economy and a fight against South African workers and workers from other countries for low wages. And it's not because people are supposedly stealing our jobs. It's because we haven't been able to create sufficient amount of jobs. And many of the political parties are fighting against foreign nationals instead of, as Duma says, creating correct strategies to deal with the unemployment crisis. The next point, if I may, is that government, and this relates to the point Crystal was making earlier on, it's very important to look at the effectiveness of spending. Currently, government spends a huge amount of resources on an employment tax incentive that gives corporations a subsidy for supposedly creating unemployment, but it doesn't in reality create any additional jobs. This resources is being directed to this employment tax incentive while there are being budget cuts imposed on the EPWP, the Expanded Public Works Program, and the Community Work program.
Yeah. Unfortunately, gentlemen and ladies, I've run out of time and I'm being asked to ask you if you please can indulge the producers on part two of this conversation, because it's an important consideration for virtually all of the voters in South Africa, because all the polls are saying unemployment is the biggest consideration for most people in what or who it is that they're going to vote for. So this conversation has to continue primarily between yourselves as our guests and our listeners who want to be the ones who engage you directly on the issues. And I have to let it go. Duma Qubule, columnist and independent economist, Crystal Duncan-Williams, Dominic Brown, thank you very much for all of your time. It's time for the book reading. The book remains Land Matters by Advocate Thembeka Ncube-Itobi. It's being narrated by Sello Makega Ncube.